Hello, everyone, and welcome to another broadcast of Planetary Makeover. Today, we have a guest that we've had on before, Betsy Whitfield, who is a philosophy major, a wife, a mother, a gardener, and an enthusiastically spiritual person who has a lot to offer. And as you can tell from the intro, we are talking about Christianity and the changes it's going through today. The transition from the old age, which we're coming out of, into the new age, as it's so often called. And both Betsy and I, and we know yourselves too, have had a lot of experience in this field of Christianity, and we're going to talk about how it's changing now and how to help understand the difficult transitions that the world is going through and our churches are going through, and the challenges to our beliefs and our faith. So welcome, Betsy.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And we're thrilled to have you back again to help elucidate this mesmerizing topic. So let's get right into it. Could you tell us a little bit more about the changes that are taking place in Christian churches across the globe? What is happening in Christian churches today?
Well, I think it's part of the transformation of a lot of our, if not all of our institutions, the way we have all grown up and been conditioned, whether it's social, economic, religious institutions. But we are, as you mentioned, in a new time, a new age, and the energies of this new age are inspiring people to challenge the institutions. To people, as everyone knows, have been demanding their rights, more freedom, more independence. And this is true also in the spiritual slash religious realm. Unfortunately for the churches themselves, this has manifest as people simply not showing up for church. And as you can imagine, if you have a large building and a system that you've been running for generations, and all of a sudden there are fewer and fewer people coming to church on a Sunday or temple on a Saturday or whatever, it's very upsetting, very chaotic. What we're hoping to do tonight is to put that into a context in which a transformation can be accomplished with the least amount of pain to the people involved. And what we're seeing is, as I say, the lower numbers of people attending church, and yet they are still Christian in their hearts. When I talk about Christianity, I mean all the Christian churches, and since that's what I'm familiar with, I think it goes on in the other religions too, although I have no personal experience with that. So what we'd like to do is offer a perspective that enables people who are spiritually alive, who are seeking for some footing in their lives, which would replace going to church every Sunday. They want God in a more approachable way. They want to see God in manifestation in their lives, not just on Sunday. And oddly enough, I think people want and expect others to live more Christian lives than we have expected them to do in the past. You know, so many times I think people think, well, we go to church on Sunday, we do this and that, and the rest of the week is business. Well, that border, as with so many borders, is becoming very loose and is breaking down. So what we're saying is Christianity is not dead. It's transforming. And because of the information, the experience we have with something called the Ageless Wisdom Teachings, we're offering that as a possible path forward so that people might research the material that we're talking about and see if it doesn't help them in their spiritual searches.
And Betsy, could you tell us a little bit about what the Ageless Wisdom Teaching is, since probably a lot of our audience is not familiar with that?
Interestingly enough, it's literally ageless. It is the science and the philosophy of life that underscores all of the traditions, actually, and manifests not only through religion, but through these principles manifest in our lives, whether we're artists, musicians, pastors, politicians, or what have you. And it is to put it very simply, it is a discussion of the rules of life. Very few and simple that we can discuss here. And that is that we have a series of lifetimes that we all live, and that we are reincarnated lifetime after lifetime. And in that reincarnation process, we develop as personalities, and then we recognize that there is a divinity in each and every person that we contact and then try to develop, and we become divine. So it's an expression of something that I think everyone has wondered about: God immanent and God transcendent at the same time.
And Betsy, why is it that so many of us Christians, for I was raised Christian, as I understand you were as well, why do so few of us understand and believe in the concept, the idea, the law of return, of reincarnation?
It was the early Christian theology, actually, propagated by a Greek scholar and theologian named Origen. And you can look him up on the internet. It's a very interesting story. His theology encompassed reincarnation and karma, the law of karma and effect. And so that was what Jesus taught. It was what the disciples taught. And unfortunately, the Emperor Justinian, the Roman Emperor Justinian, I think it was in, 535 or something, decided that this notion that people could learn on their own without having to go to a church was not good for the institutions or the ability of clergy to control them, that they would simply, I think the word was, anathematize Origen. And so they stripped him of all of his authority and took the notions of reincarnation and karma out of the Bible as much as they could.
And how do you spell his name?
O-R-I-G-E-N.
O-R-I-G-E-N. So viewers, check it out. And my understanding is too that Emperor Justinian was thinking along, probably putting 21st century thought forms on a 5th century man, that if his subjects thought that life was a one-shot deal, they'd probably be easier to manipulate. And didn't they also miss a few references to reincarnation, or maybe left them in on purpose?
Well, yes, there are a couple of things. Remember Elijah, the stories about Elijah, and that the sins of the father are visited on the sons. So there's a little bit there. There's also a notion of the consciousness or the divinity within mankind, within each person, that is still buried in the Bible, but it is not actively or has not been actively provided in discussions with parishioners.
And wasn't that mentioned? I'm not a Bible scholar myself.
Nor I. So be careful.
Okay. A couple of times in the New Testament, I think it was Jesus and his disciples, and they asked him why this man was blind, and he'd been blind since birth. And they says, you know, had he sinned? Well, since he'd been blind since birth, he couldn't have sinned. So it suggests that the blindness was a result of actions from a past life.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So all of those nuggets are in there. I don't know how much Bible reading is done by people in the Catholic Church, for example. I don't think very much. I think there's going to be more of it now because of the changes, the fact that people are wanting to really dig in and find out what it's all about. And they have questions. They have really serious questions. And one of the things that the Ageless Wisdom teachings can do is provide some answers.
And perhaps we have some listeners here who are more learned in terms of Bible study, and they can look these things up for us. And feel free to contact us and give us your opinion. And of course, I was raised Christian, Catholic specifically, and at about 20 years old, I stopped going to Mass. Wasn't angry, wasn't disappointed, didn't resent the church, I wasn't afraid. I guess I was just feeling I wasn't getting anything out of it, but it was a very detached type of decision. And my mom would always say, well, don't blame God for the mistakes of man. So she was afraid, you know, I'd turn away from divinity because I wasn't going to Catholic Church.
Yeah.
But I understand that you had your own experience with that.
Yes, I was raised in a fairly serious Catholic environment from a church standpoint, although my parents were, I suppose you would say, liberal. But I went to a Presbyterian college, and there was a little church in town. And of course, I, you know, would go to Mass there on Sunday. And during one discussion with a priest, I let him know that I was at the local Presbyterian college, and he basically threatened me with excommunication. And I thought, well, you know, I think that's it. I don't have anywhere to go after this. So I continued with philosophy studies and eventually came across with Benjamin Krem's books on the Ageless Wisdom teachings, and then read some of the background material. And that is why I think it tells you that there is life beyond churchianity, and it's going to be okay, and it is a chance to revive your own spirituality rather than be rather mechanical about it.
And mentioning my mom again, since she was so involved in Catholicism and Christianity, more so than my dad, she was an early questioner of church policy in our age, that is. She would say, why can't we use birth control? Where are the women priests? What do you mean the Pope is infallible? And at one point, she even stopped going to church briefly because the Pope at that time was so conservative that she just couldn't take it anymore. And that was really painful for her. Mm-hmm. But she went back. But to go back to what you were talking about, you mentioned Benjamin Krem, that author, esotericist, and artist. Could you tell us a little bit more about him and how he's connected to the Ageless Wisdom teaching?
Well, Benjamin Krem is the late Benjamin Krem. He died in 2016, so he's very contemporary, actually. He spent all of his adult life traveling the world, announcing the reappearance of the Christ. or the world teacher, as we call him, the teacher of our spiritual hierarchy and for men and women in incarnation for this whole age of Aquarius that we're in. And you can imagine what a job that was. He was a very articulate man, very talented, very brave. And what he would do would be to go to cities, invited, of course, and he would give talks and he would discuss his experiences and provide information about the reappearance of the teacher, Maitreya. And then he would have a blessing from Maitreya at the beginning and end of each of his lectures. I attended one of those lectures in 1985 and was blown away by my experience during one of those overshadowings, as they say. So Benjamin Krem was in touch telepathically with one of the teachers who is called the Master of Wisdom, a group who are around and the major disciples of Maitreya. And these masters are highly perfected men from our perspective, but they have evolved spiritually as we are, but they're a bit ahead of us. And this master, Benjamin Krem's master, provided really incredible answers to questions and information on the world we live in now. And of course, talked about what would happen when Maitreya is publicly out and about and teaching among men and women. So it was an extraordinary gift to humanity to have such a man do this for, 35 years, and make himself available not only to individuals who attended his lectures, could ask questions. He was on television and on radio, and so really tried to ground the idea that this great teacher, who is not alone in his coming, but that this great teacher has come himself in a physical body and is now walking among us, trying to inspire people to have peace, to work together, to be cooperative, to look at the way we live and see if we can't do a lot better.
And let's just define some of these terms for the audience, some of whom may be puzzled or scratching their heads right now, since they probably never heard of Benjamin Krem, but you've given some background, and probably never heard of Maitreya. And Benjamin Krem, I just wanted to say, is sort of a modern day John the Baptist, but he also would say that he didn't expect anyone to believe anything he was saying, because that would interfere with your free will. This information is coming from people like Betsy and I and Benjamin Krem, who have no authority. It doesn't interfere with your free will. But if an authority figure from church or politics told you about this, you might believe it just because they said it. And that would be an infringement of your free will. So back to the ageless wisdom teaching, Maitreya, as I understand it, Betsy, is a non-denominational figure. He prefers the term of teacher, very simple man. He'd say there's no difference between us and him. Mm-hmm. And he's here to help humanity learn about their true nature, where we came from, why we're here, where we're going, through the practicing of honesty of mind, sincerity of spirit, and detachment. And there was something else about that I wanted to make a point. I think it's probably just that none of this the audience has to believe. This is not belief-based. Stick to your faiths. Whatever religion you're involved in, you're involved with that in this lifetime for a reason. So stick to that. And I now remember what it is, Betsy. And the masters of wisdom that we've talked about, these perfected human beings, they're really just you and I, several hundred or a couple thousand years from now. In other words, we'll all be perfected human beings eventually. That's the path that everyone is on. So it's not as if they consider themselves superior to us. They consider themselves your friends, your brothers, your teachers. They do not place themselves above you in any way, and they are not looking for followers, and they don't expect you to believe in them. So moving on from that, part of the theme, as you know, of this show is, and do you feel the reemergence of deep spirituality and open your eyes to it? So since we're talking about renewal and giving people some comfort and encouragement to let them know that their religion is not on the way out or falling apart or being left behind by humanity. On the contrary, it's getting a new shot of life, and it's changing, it's evolving, just as we, meaning you and I, are also doing, as is the planet. So, Betsy, you talked about your own sort of renewal, going from church in your youth to moving beyond it. And how about today, when you're going to church with your family when they go? What is that like? How has that changed for you?
Well, it's very interesting. On Christmas, when my family comes, and we usually, because my children are raised in the Catholic Church, and now they continue on. When I step into the church for Mass, the energy of love is so potent that I have to wear dark glasses because my eyes start streaming with tears. And they're not sad tears. It's a response to this overwhelming sense of love that I feel. And it's a bit embarrassing and all of that. But what it tells me is that the church, especially at the high points of the communion, the church is filled with God's love. If people will just get out of the way, sit there, and maybe receive that love, to know that it's there. And according to Benjamin Krem's master, both the master Jesus, who is one of the senior disciples of Maitreya, and Maitreya himself charge or bless the Eucharist, whether it's wine or bread or whatever, at the high point of the Mass. So what I'm saying is, you know, the church may be empty, but they are there. And if people who want to, not everyone has to, obviously, not everyone is religious. I mean, I think you can get as much energy from a meditation, a beautiful painting, especially by one of the old masters, but that energy is there for people to receive, and it will provide healing, comfort, everything that you need in your spiritual life. It's really quite extraordinary.
And again, we're not asking anyone who's listening to believe us. In fact, as one speaker I'm fond of says before he starts his talk, don't believe anything I'm about to tell you. And that way it doesn't interfere with your free will. The Christians follow Jesus. And what we're talking about here is the emergence also of Jesus. And so Christians are not going to start following Maitreya. The masters aren't looking for followers. They're teachers. Mm-hmm. And Jesus, the historical figure Jesus, is going to emerge publicly too. And maybe you could talk to us a little bit about what he's been doing since that life 2,000 years ago, according to the ageless wisdom teaching. Betsy, and what is he doing now? Well, and what will his role be when we see him publicly?
Right. Well, after the crucifixion, and we can talk about that relationship between he and Maitreya back in Palestine, but after his death on the cross, in his next life, he was Apollonius of Tyana, a well-educated young man who was a philosopher, studied philosophy, and literally walked from his home in Babylonia out to India, where he ascended, took the next initiation, the ascension, and became a master. Now, Harvard Classics has the books on that. That trip was cataloged by a scholar who walked with him. It's quite interesting. It's quite an interesting book. So Jesus became a master in the next life after Palestine. And he, as have the other masters, lived in the Himalayas all these tens of hundreds of thousands of years since then, waiting for their next job, I suppose, which has occurred now. They all work with Maitreya. The Master Jesus works with Maitreya hand in hand. And as Maitreya has begun to emerge, Jesus works with him. There is a magazine called Share International Magazine in which readers send in their various experiences of one of these masters. And very often they will have an experience meeting a person who they cannot get out of their mind. The meeting was so very special and intimate. And Benjamin Krem's master would say, yes, that was Maitreya or the Master Jesus. And there, one that I remember is that they were riding a bicycle built for two, the two of them, Maitreya in the front and the Master Jesus in the back. So they are master and disciple at the very highest levels. Jesus has come back into public, relatively public work, still a little behind the scenes, but he is, and this is his mission, transforming the Christian churches wherever they are found by shaking loose the dogmas that have crystallized and I think have probably been responsible for many people leaving the church. So the church is being renewed by the Master Jesus. It's his job. He is in charge wherever these churches are found. And I think that is why these energies at the Mass have become so potent that it's almost hard to bear. So what I'm saying is, he's on the case. The churches will be totally transformed, and they will be what they should have been all along, places of teaching and healing for their parishioners.
So my take on that is that Jesus' job in this era would be to cleanse the church of any and all corruption that has crept in over the last 2,000 years. Yes. And I thought I had read before that he also appeared to people centuries ago, or even millennia ago, peoples in the Americas and in the Far East, who probably knew him by different names, mm-hmm. and also expected him to return. And so that I hope that that notion will be of comfort to Christians everywhere reading this. They don't have to believe what we say, except that we hope they embrace the notion that Jesus is back in the world and they will see him, if they haven't already seen him in disguise, soon. But I want to return to the trend that you were talking about in the church, where people were leaving and in some cases now coming back. That trend that you call deconstructing.
Yes, that's what they, the people, and I read this online. There's a man called Dan Foster, who is a Christian. I think he must have been a pastor. He has an article that he writes almost every day called The Backyard Church. And he has, I think, very much loves Christianity, But he has been looking very hard at the dogmas, at the structures, at the corruption that has gone on, and at the way Christians have not lived the teachings. And so he has written these articles. They're on medium.com and I think substack.com. But the people who write comments in have called themselves deconstructed. They are deconstructing what they call the churchianity, which is really part of what I think Dan Foster is speaking to. And you can see that these people have a great deal of Christian love inside them, but they just cannot handle the old ways. So what I'm saying is, this is not a question of the church being dead. It is certainly not. It is being born even as we speak.
Well, that's certainly encouraging. And so if you can elaborate further on the return of Christians to their respective churches and how that's manifesting also in the media.
Well, interestingly enough, I've been seeing ads on television now where whether it's an actor or I don't know who they are, but anyway, they are advertising a personal relationship with Jesus. And the ad is a man walking by a beach, in a beach, and he's talking about loneliness and discomfort that people feel. And he talks about the fact that Jesus is waiting for those who need him to come to him, and he will provide comfort. And at the end, he says, and if you if you believe what I'm saying and you would like to know more, let me know and I'll send you a Bible. The other interesting thing that I've noticed on Tucker Carlson's interview while he was with Fox News, this was about a year ago, I think, he had on the actor John Voight, if you remember who that is. And they were talking randomly in the beginning of this interview, and all of a sudden, John Voight started telling very personal story about how he had reached a point in his life where his life was a mess. His marriage was done. His career was in a hold. There was nothing going on. And he was really, really up against it. And he said, a voice came into my ear as loudly as you're talking to me now and told me to sit up and listen. He didn't detail all of the things that this voice was telling him. However, he said it impressed him. He couldn't believe the energy and the excitement he was feeling when this little discussion was finished. And he said it lasted over and over again for about 3 days. And he was very reticent about what exactly was said. But he said, this voice said to him, I am building a stairway to heaven one step at a time. And having experienced Maitreya's energy myself, I thought very clearly that that must have been a visit from Maitreya. And so here is someone who certainly wasn't religious. I don't think he's religious now, but he is very inspired to help to rebuild our world on a more compassionate and loving basis, which is what the masters are here to teach us.
And John Voight, I believe, is in his mid-80s now. So when it comes to spiritual growth and breakthroughs and evolution, age is just a number.
That's right.
And, I know we talked about the history of religion is based on right human relationships and the energy of love, and that this is applicable to all religious groups. And I know too, I just want to pause for a moment and say that I know some of what we discussed is pretty heady and pretty trippy to some of our audience. But again, this is for your consideration only. You needn't believe anything we say. And look into this for yourself. And the answers that really matter and that have a lasting effect will come from within you.
That's now, certainly true. I think that's one of the most important messages that we could offer here, that you don't have to look outside of yourself for God. God lives within you. And Maitreya embodies the second aspect of God. This is technical, I know, but he is so pure. He and the Buddha were the first of humanity on this planet to become self or God realized. And so he is so pure that he can physically embody the love energy of God. He's a messenger and a teacher. And what he is interested in is not that people should believe in him. He says this, don't believe in me. I want you to experience me. And that experience is the incredible love energy that from time to time we feel. And I think most people, at least in this lifetime, will have a chance to experience also.
And again, that is coming from within, as it has in the experiences you described having. And of course, John Voight as well. He heard a voice inside of him. It wasn't coming from the outside. And so this is where the real change occurs. And as I said, lasts. I'm wondering too, what about the advent and the return to and the greater inclusion of women in leadership roles in the church today?
Well, a couple of things. This age of Aquarius, which we are now in, firmly in, is the age of the woman, of the age in which the feminine aspect of humanity will balance out the male aspect, not dominate, but balance out within each person. And when that happens, maybe hundreds of years from now, then women will have the equal male-female polarity blended together, and then women can become the priest. The point of men being the priest is that when Jesus worked, when Maitreya overshadowed Jesus and worked in Palestine, they were grounding the kingdom of God on earth. And that grounding has gone on for all these 2,000 years and now is thoroughly grounded. The principles of the kingdom are well known: compassion, love, helpfulness, service. Everybody should know those. And now, the priest who needed to be male, the male polarity, the positive pole of the electrical connection between this love energy and the earth, will be balanced. Until that time, the males are the positive, and so they are grounding this energy of love and are continuing to do so until the feminine is developed properly. And then there will be women priests. You can already see, though, that women are taking their places within church activities. So we're getting there.
This is true. And let me remind the audience, too, we're talking about the age of Aquarius. This is about 2,150 years, something like that.
I think that's, yeah, it started in 1625. The age of Pisces was the symbol of the fish, as we know, which was the Christian symbol back in Palestine. And as the earth comes into alignment with another of the constellations, the energies of that constellation start to stream in and saturate the earth and inspire humanity of that time to manifest the energy, the products of those energies. So the age of Pisces, which brought Christianity to its height, was the age in which we developed our very high individuality and idealism at the same time. The age of Aquarius is the age of synthesis and brotherhood. Those are the energies that are pouring into us now. And so if you look around, you can see that the there are two camps. There are the old age thinkers who are highly individual, very competitive, and believe in competition. And you have the usually the younger generations who are not interested in competition. They fail at competition, but they are much more social. They have groups of friends, and they are interested in compassion and brotherhood and people getting along. So that age of Aquarius energy is really what is causing, if you will, the changes that we're seeing and the chaos that we're seeing in our culture today. So, yes.
And my understanding, too, is that this change happens every 2,000 years. Every 2,000 years, there's a change of age. The old energies go out, the new come in. Now, when we're talking about the age of Pisces or the age of Aquarius, we're not talking about astrology. We're talking astronomy. And any astronomer with worth his salt will tell you that the Earth is now becoming oriented towards the constellation of Aquarius. And that also, as you mentioned, we're coming into the full expression of the divine, of the feminine aspect of the divine. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to hear more too about this spiritual revival that occurred at Asbury College earlier in the year.
Well, it was really interesting, very surprising, and just really wonderful. In February of this year, there was an event at a Asbury University in Kentucky, a Christian college. There was an event at their regular Friday meeting, convocation, if you will. And the coach was giving a talk, a football coach was giving a talk to the students that were sitting there that Friday. And when he finished his talk, he expected everyone to get up and leave and go to classes. No one left. And there entered this room, this extraordinary love energy. Had I been there, I probably would have been weeping all over the place. But there was this extraordinary energy. And the people wouldn't leave. The children would not leave. It went on for 2 weeks. People came from all over the world. It was on all the major media stations. This was a revival that was a little bit different than previous revivals because of the fact that the students said they felt like they had been taken to a new country, that the love energy was so strong. And of course they sang and they hugged each other and just sat there and enjoyed this beautiful, beautiful energy. And I would think that it probably was the Master Jesus's work, but we don't know, obviously. But this was extraordinarily appropriate because most of the students are from the age group we call Gen Z. which is the least interested in religion per se. They are not interested in buying a house, you know, having a car and doing all the things that most youngsters in our day would like. They wanted that, and they got this experience of the lifetime. And so, as I've said before, Maitreya said, I don't want you to believe in me. I want you to experience me. So it was very fitting that this generation in particular would have that powerful experience. And apparently there were other churches, Christian churches, campuses who had also the same experience. So it was really spectacular. And another reason to imagine that through his messengers, God is working with humanity quite actively and helping us as we transition into this new civilization that's being built.
Sounds like a remarkable experience.
Yeah.
Regardless of what one's religious denomination is, or those of none at all. And that you reminded me there of a quote from Maitreya, the world teacher who we've been talking about. Benjamin Krem, who we also mentioned, the author, artist, and esotericist, who wrote close to 20 books on the subject of the Ageless Wisdom teaching and the emergence of the world teacher Maitreya. In one of them, titled The Laws of Life, Maitreya says, in the light, there are no disagreements. In the dark, even two people will argue. And that sounded like a truly light-filled experience. So returning to the idea of the deconstructed Christians, what are some of the questions they may be asking themselves, the church, and the world in general about their faith at this time, as they see things and their faith changing and evolving?
Well, some of the questions that I've heard is, who is God anyway? And if God is so good and so great, how come we live in this mess that we live in? And the Ageless Wisdom teachings teach that God is not a human, not a being, not a man with a beard sitting on a throne high up in heaven, filing his fingernails while we struggle here. But that God is the consciousness that embraces all of the energies, all of the laws about those energies, and the forces of those energies that comprise the physical manifestation that we consider to be as solid on this earth. And we know from quantum physics now that there's nothing solid about what we are experiencing in our physical world, that it is all vibration. And the level of vibration determines how the manifestation is occurring. So it's very difficult for people to understand that this, we do not live in a mechanical universe. We live in a vibrational universe. And so this is a leap of consciousness that we all have to make if we're to understand really what's going on. Other things they ask about, who is Jesus? Is he God? And many Christians, of course, think he is God himself. And the Ageless Wisdom teaches that there is divinity as potential in most of us. Some of us have realized that divinity within, as did Jesus, and have become fully expressive of that divine capacity. And they are, of course, the masters of wisdom. So Jesus is God, a son of God, just as we are all sons and daughters of God, which makes us a family, all children of God, which is something that Maitreya is very careful to point out, that humanity is a family. And his teaching manifests as a willingness, the need for all of us to share Earth's resources among all peoples and to end the kind of starvation and hostility that we see and that is becoming very dangerous on this planet.
And so much of that, Betsy, goes back to what's already in the Bible, what Jesus is reported to have said 2,000 years ago about treat your fellow man as your brother and welcome and feed and clothe the stranger, particularly poignant in this age of mass migration and refugees and all the rest of it. And I know you commented too on how science has proven now that everything is energy. And speaking of energy, another boat that a lot of us Christians missed, me included for many years, was the concept of meditation. Meditation is as foreign to some of us as reincarnation may have been, in some cases still is. Some face even askew meditation. And I was wondering if you could explain what transmission meditation is, what is its value, and how does it intersect with both Christianity and the ageless wisdom teaching?
Well, there is a great need during this very chaotic transition period for more love energy, the energy of Aquarius that creates synthesis and the notion of brotherhood. There's a great need for groups of people to sit together and step down these highly potent cosmic energies to a level that humanity can absorb. And the groups of people that are serving the world in that way are doing the transmission meditation. There are no messages sent, that it's strictly transmission of energy from hierarchy through the groups of meditators, and then hierarchy sends that energy out into the world where it's needed most, or to top up the great pool of energy, Aquarian energy, that can be used when needed for people who are trying to create cooperation and what have you. So it's a wonderful service, good for your karma, and there's never a charge. It's totally voluntary.
Okay. Well, we've only got 3 minutes left, so we're going to have to start to wrap up. And I wanted to say, too, for our audience, for those who may not be familiar with these terms, Betsy was using the term hierarchy, and she's hearkening back to several things she's already mentioned, including that's the Masters of Wisdom. They have many names, including the spiritual hierarchy of the planet,
Lords of Compassion.
That's it, the Lords of Compassion.
The Communion of Saints is something that people may be familiar with. There are books that people can read that are very helpful in understanding this. One is called Maitreya's Messages. One is called From Bethlehem to Calvary by Alice Bailey. Benjamin Krem's book, The Reappearance of the Christ and the Masters of Wisdom. And the brochure that's on the shareinternational.us website called The Ageless Wisdom Teachings and Christianity.
Yes, and to learn more about transmission meditation, you can also go to, this is very simple, www.transmissionmeditation.org. And it's really a world service. And there you can learn more about it. And I think a lot of you would find that intriguing, and you don't have to believe any of that either. I belong to a transmission group, and there's people that come that don't believe any of this. They just like to meditate. So we all get something out of it. And now that we've gone over the ageless wisdom teaching, perhaps we could, in our last minute, we can, and that's all we've got, is throw a couple other names at the group for them to research, Betsy, from the Ageist Wisdom Teaching, some other authors?
Yes. Helena Blavatsky, I think a lot of people know about her books. She was a Russian woman who was the first to bring the Ageless Wisdom teachings to the Western minds. We had Helena Rorick, who initiated the Agni Yoga Society and agniyoga.org. We had Alice Bailey and Benjamin Krem.
And that's about all we have time for. And thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. And we'll have Betsy back again, you can be sure. And please be sure to pepper us with questions and go to www.planetarymakeover.org and let us know how you feel about this show and other shows on our website. And thank you so much again for tuning in. And we'll see you again soon. Thank you, Betsy.
Thank you.